Blessed be the darkness, the vast expansion, the all-encompassing, all-surrounding womb of space. Blessed be the light, the penetrating point, the all-focusing, all-aligning core of creation. Blessed be the blade that divides the darkness from the light, thus generating duality, and from duality is all substance formed. The cleansing by water, the purity of salt, combining together, so merged we exalt. By the blade that separates the darkness from the light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I conjure this circle as a sacred place, shifting the confines of time and space, an island apart and a fortress between yesterday's sorrow and tomorrow's dream. Blessed be the vessel wherein the divided may unite. Welcome to the 12th episode of the Covening Podcast. I am your host, Lady Sitara. In this episode, I will be presenting Magical Workings, including a lesson on true names and shadow work, an introduction to divination, followed by my version of the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. This is the first and probably only podcast that I will present that will be devoted completely to magical workings. In the first 8 episodes of the Covening Podcast, I presented some of the basics of early coven training and ritual. In the 9th episode, I explained how I discovered the goddess and the goddess within Wicca. In the 10th episode, I presented you with the vernal equinox ritual, which is the second Sabbat ritual that you have attended in my coven. In the 11th episode, I presented some of my research on the religion of the Hittites, particularly the Hurrian Hittites. Today is March 19th, and we are sandwiched between the March eclipsed full moon and the equinox. If you are planning to perform the Aikitu ritual that I presented in episode 10, the participant who portrays the defeated adversary, that is, the person who portrays the dragon in the case of the Aikitu ritual, serves a very important role. That person is standing in for the evil which needs to be defeated. That person needs to be strong enough and magically adept enough to redirect that energy where it needs to go, to reflect it off themselves and onto the appropriate target. At the feast, after the ritual, this person needs to be especially honored and recognized for taking on that role. So in order to support the person portraying the dragon, and also because it is time for me to present lessons on magic, we need to begin with banishing. Here is your magical service announcement. Magical service announcement. Be prepared to banish before you evoke. That is what is known as the first law of magic. Don't call up what you can't put down. Don't evoke what you can't banish. I know some of you might only be doing candle spells and affirmations. There are plenty of places you can learn about that, and at some point I'm sure I'll present some of those too. But in keeping with my mission of presenting the essentials as quickly as possible so that you can be prepared for whatever you need to do, and good Girl Scout that I am, I want us all to be prepared to handle the big stuff just in case. Once upon a time, in a land far, far away, there was a witch who was not a complete novice. She was intermediate, or possibly a little better in her skills. And she was doing some second degree level work. She had already completed an elemental working for each of the 4 elements, rebirthing, shamanic drumming, samadhi tank, you get the idea. So it was time for her to advance to planetary workings. But unlike the elemental workings, for planetary workings, she was planning to actually do some evocations to familiarize herself with the planetary energies. Being the crafty little witch that she was, she embroidered an entire set of planetary squares. She had a second-floor apartment with a cozy little sewing room that she had been using as her temple, and everything was set up so that she could do her planetary workings. She started on her first planetary working and used an evocation that she had written, and nothing happened. But knowing that you always need to banish after an evocation, even if you don't see any results, she banished anyway. She decided that the next time she did the evocation, she would make sure she had plenty of time to wait after the evocation to see if anything happened. A couple of days later, she proceeded the same way and used her evocation and then sat and waited, meditating comfortably in the circle, attuning herself to be aware of subtle energies, when she thought she felt something extremely uncomfortable. It felt heavy and dark and stifling. That was unexpected. She banished 3 times before closing the circle. Afterwards, she wasn't sure what had happened. She hadn't felt anything like that before in her temple, and she had been using the temple for some time, but she hadn't actually done any ceremonial evocations there before. Maybe it was just her imagination. It was worth giving it another try. Next time, she proceeded again as she had done before, and this time, she was certain of what she was feeling. It felt heavy and dark and stifling, and there was something definitely there. And she knew it was definitely something because this particular witch thought of herself as spirit deaf, like tone deaf. She was not a very good medium. Something really had to be big and obvious before she noticed it, and she was definitely noticing this. She banished 3 times before dispersing the circle. The energy lingered. The witch knew it was there. Something in the sewing room. She went into the sewing room almost every day just to banish. And after more than a year, less than 2 years, the heaviness started to lift. The room seemed and felt lighter, brighter, less stifling. The witch returned to her planetary working and proceeded with her evocation. She waited. This time she felt the planetary energy. She was able to complete her working, and at the end of the working, as always, she banished. The witch was eventually able to complete all her planetary workings, and she never felt that oppressive energy again, but she always banished. The malevolent energy seemed to be gone. She'll never know if it left because of her banishing, or if it left for some other reason, just the passage of time. But she knew that the reason it did not attach to her is because she continued to banish it. Yes, she did get a clue about what the energy might have been. Shortly after the heaviness lifted, the witch found out that years earlier there had been a suicide on the first floor, directly under her sewing room. There are still a lot of unanswered questions. Did the suicide itself create the malevolent energy? Or was the young woman who had committed suicide haunted by that malevolent energy and it drove her to suicide? When the malevolent energy left, did it disintegrate into nothingness? Or did it just go away and start looking for another host? The reason I insist on teaching banishing is because I don't know the answer to any of those questions. We are going to start with one important concept before we proceed. This concept has many labels. You will almost always find it in any book about ceremonial magic. It is the doctrine of the true name. The idea is that every spirit and every entity, human, animal, etc., and every magical tool has a true name. If you know the true name of an entity, you can call it forth, and you can banish it. The reason your magical tools have a true name is because by using them as magical tools, you have imprinted them with a spirit. There are a minimum of 3 true names you absolutely must know, and they are your own true name, the name of your athame, and the name of your chalice. I would also recommend that you know the true name of your wand and pentacle, but you have some time for that. Some witches engrave their athames and their chalice with their item's true name in Theban script. Some witches keep it in a journal or an accounting book with the names of their magical tools and the details about how they created or acquired them, such as the date of purchase or creation and details of how it was acquired or created. Perhaps you have an idea about how you might acquire those names. I will tell you the most common ways witches get those names. One way is to go on a vision quest. This is particularly helpful for your own name. Go to your power spot or go somewhere out in nature, a meadow, the deep woods, the beach, a hilltop, and look for signs. Maybe some branches arranged as letters, or sit by a babbling brook and listen. Ask nature to reveal your true name to you. Put all your senses into receptive mode and pay attention. Method 2. Deep meditation. Set your intention before you start meditating. It may take more than one sitting. Burn some incense or use some oil in a diffuser that has a scent that you especially like. Method 3. Use a pendulum. Method 4. Use a Ouija board. Method 5. Use automatic writing. Use a pen and lined paper. Get your writing started, primed, by making loops or scallops, and when you feel your muscles twitch, go with that movement, but don't look at what you have written, and then continue using the scallops or the loops. It may take several pages. When you feel like you are done, go back and look at what you have written, and circle what you can identify as letters. Circle them in a different color. The last three methods I mentioned, pendulum, Ouija board, and automatic writing, are the methods most commonly used for determining the names of your Athamian chalice. Have those items in front of you in the circle and ask them for their names and then proceed with your oracle. Here's a quick intro into divination. Our own deep minds subconsciously already know the answers to many of the questions we ask ourselves and others. Tools of divination are useful to the extent that they enable us to get in touch with the answers we already have in our own deep minds. When a witch looks at a tarot card, for example, for an answer to a particular question, she has already studied the symbolism and all the possible meanings associated with the tarot card, but as she gazes at that card she pulled with the question in her mind, one particular part of the card or the symbolism in it will catch her attention first, and with that, she intuitively knows the correct interpretation of that card in order to answer her question. So, you may ask, how does a pendulum or automatic writing do that? In the case of the pendulum or automatic writing, what we are doing is using our own body, our own muscles, to feed information from our autonomic nervous system, which is connected to our subconscious and deep mind, into our tool, the pen or the pendulum, so it can reveal the answer to our conscious mind. The human body has a particular reaction to stress. Certain muscles will tighten up and get more blood flow. Other biological processes like digestion will shut down or be paused. When we tune our pendulum, we ask it to give us a response to a known happy truth. It shows us how it will spin when our muscles are relaxed. When we ask our pendulum to respond to something we know to be false, or to something that stresses us, the pendulum will show us how it spins when our muscles tighten. Touch for health and chiropractic kinesthesiology muscle tests work exactly the same way. The reason we need to have our own true name is so that we can pull ourselves out of being lost in our own deep mind, should that ever happen. The reason we need to know the names of our athame and our chalice is so that we can call for them on the astral, which is what we will need to do when we do our banishing, Magical tools always have names, whether we know them or not, and it is better for us to know the names of ours. King Arthur had a sword named Excalibur. Someone who has a King Arthur complex might name a tool or weapon of his for that sword, perhaps his pen or his social media platform. Personally, I would also like to know the true names of my adversaries, or barring that, at least the true names of their tools or weapons. The one other subject we need to understand before we can do banishings is shadow work. The bad news is that shadow work is never done. It's never completed until you die. There are many different ways to approach shadow work, including psychological counseling therapy. You just have to pick the method or methods that are right for you, and at different times in your life, a different approach might be more effective. The bulk of shadow work is examining your own motives and actions so that you know what motivates you and you understand at least a little about why, especially in regard to the things we do not like to admit to others or ourselves. So here is the question. Is your shadow yours, or is it humanity's? Does an evil entity arise from outside yourself, or is it part of you? Has it been part of you all along? Nothing human is unknown to me. Nothing human is foreign to me. Nothing human is alien to me. Various translations. Let's go back to our first magic lesson from episode 3, when I talked about how the cone of power actually works as opposed to how we think it works. Here is what I said. Throughout the entire process of the cone of power, we acknowledge a connection between ourselves and the target that already exists. And in the process of acknowledging that link, our greater self passes a message to their greater self. That somehow helps the greater self of the target to refocus on an issue that needs to be addressed. What I am proposing here is something akin to what quantum physics labels entanglement. We have each incarnated into our own separate bodies with our individual filters and blind spots. But at some level in our deep mind, we are all connected to each other, and that includes spirits as well as incarnate entities. Banishing is actually a method for fortifying our own personal shields so that the stuff that we deem undesirable does not creep in. During that process, we address the entity as if it is separate from us. And in some ways it is, and in some ways it is not. In order to create the physical world, in the separating of darkness and light, the creator or creators introduced imperfection. What is manifest as physical cannot be perfect. And so, in addition to the conditions on Earth itself, earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, avalanches, droughts, forest fires, we also have people who are corrupt, taking power. People who are deviants, sadists, and predators, harming other people. People who surrender their own ability to think things through and allow themselves to be manipulated by evil with an agenda. The sad news is that we can never fully rid ourselves of evil, whether we perceive it inside us or outside us. What we can do is keep our awareness about it so that it does not get the better of us, and find the least harmful ways to channel those impulses. That is what shadow work is about, confronting that part of ourselves that we wish to hide from ourselves and others. Just to be clear, what I am talking about is fear, phobia, self-hatred, self-destructive impulses, self-sabotage, self-harm, addiction, choosing bad relationships, feelings of inadequacy, despair, blind spots, lust, greed, rage, revenge, jealousy, hatred of others, racism, imperialism, supremacy, lust for power. When it comes to shadow work, sunlight, that is awareness, is the best disinfectant. Also, if you find yourself wallowing in shadow, the best way out is to look for the light at the end of the tunnel. Get yourself out in the sunlight. Surround yourself with love and happiness, even silliness. Laughter is also powerful medicine. Take the time to build up your own strength so that you can address your issues directly. Strengthening yourself means learning the lessons of forgiveness, gratitude, and empathy. As autonomous people, we are supposed to be self-interested and self-advocating to a certain degree, and each one of us needs to determine what responsibility we have towards ourselves and our fellow human beings. There will always be people who refuse to see it that way with various excuses. I was born disadvantaged, and the only way I can compensate for that is by elevating my own worth above everyone else, or by stealing from other people. Those who do harm to others always have a rationale. Shadow work means piercing those rationales. It would be irresponsible of me to provide magical methods of addressing your shadow, because the nature of magic is that if you are already thoroughly controlled by your own shadow, there is no way for you to see your way out of it using magic. Think of Aleister Crowley. One of the best things he did for humanity was to publicly display how thoroughly a gifted magician could be controlled and deceived, blinded by his own shadow. If you find yourself in a spot like his, take yourself to a good therapist or exorcist. Just banishing will not be sufficient. You will need the help of another skilled person, at least one and maybe more. Now on to banishing. The first step in banishing is to strengthen yourself mentally, physically, and emotionally. Cultivate healthy routines around diet and exercise. Learn the lessons of forgiveness, gratitude, and empathy. The second step in banishing is to know yourself. That is why I spent so much time explaining shadow work. Knowing your own weaknesses and vulnerabilities helps you to recognize when you are being manipulated. If you crave recognition, veneration, fame, or infamy, evil spirits can absolutely use that to manipulate you to their own advantage. The third step is to know your own true name and the true names of your elemental tools. You will think those names silently during the banishing. Know the names of your deities in their warrior-protector aspects. You will use those names aloud in your banishing. Also helpful would be the names of a protector familiar or a powerful deceased relative or friend or a trusted spirit ally. After you have finished evoking a spirit, use each of your senses one at a time to check for a sense of presence. Some people experience a presence as a particular type of ringing in their ears, or a shiver down their spine, or a swollen feeling in their fingers. Some people see presences or smell them, or feel cold or warm when an evocation has been successful, and then experience the absence of those sensations after the entity has been banished. Until or even after you have developed those senses, it is better to overdo rather than underdo banishings. Practice and memorize this banishing. Practice it aloud in a commanding voice. Stand in the center of your circle, facing east, in star position. Your hands are empty. Hearken unto my voice, all spirits, all shades, all dwellers in the realm of phantasm. Know me as, think your magical name here, the great God, God name in his warrior aspect, stands before me with an army of great gods to defend me. The great goddess, goddess name in her warrior aspect here, stands before me with an army of great goddesses to defend me. As you recite the following, visualize each of the elements. My right hand is a fist of fire. My left hand is a spring of water. My right foot is a gust of air. My left foot is a mountain of earth. The purple pentacle shines on my forehead. Take a moment to visualize the purple pentacle on your third eye. Upon my back, the golden star gleams. take a moment to visualize either a golden sun or a six-pointed star emanating from your back, with its center in the middle of your back, about the level of your ninth ribs. In alliance or opposition, I am prepared, for I carry the blade of justice. Think the name of your Athami and imagine it in your dominant hand. And the cup of empathy. Think the name of your chalice and imagine it in your opposite hand. Begone, O spirit. Use the spirit name here if you know it. Go in peace. Return to your realm, or you shall know my wrath. Hold forth the blade, and the wrath of the mighty Lord and Lady who protect me. Stand in the center of the circle, the place of power, and face each quarter, one at a time, Vidushins. Pick up your Athami and your pentacle. Start by facing north. Hold your Athami in your dominant hand and hold your pentacle as a shield in the other. Extend your arms to the quarter and recite. By the might of the moon and the midday sun, by the warrior god, god name here, and goddess, goddess name here, I command you, spirit, spirit name here if you know it, leave. And any shade or spirit, any entity that remains, linger not upon this circle. Return, return from whence you came. Return to the realm of the dead. And now you turn and face west. By the might of the moon and the midday sun, by the warrior god and goddess, I command you, spirit, leave. Any shade or spirit, any entity that remains, linger not upon this circle. Return, return from whence you came. Return to the realm of dreams. And now you turn and face south. By the might of the moon and the midday sun, by the warrior god and goddess, I command you, spirit, leave. And any shade or spirit, any entity that remains, linger not upon this circle. Return, return from whence you came. Return to the realm of primal urges. And now turn and face east. By the might of the moon and the midday sun, by the warrior god and goddess, I command you, spirit, leave. And any shade or spirit, any entity that remains, linger not upon this circle. Return, return from whence you came. Return to the realm of visions. And now turn to the north and salute the north with your Athami. Feel the energy in the room. If it has settled, disperse the circle. If there is still a feeling of presence, repeat the banishing. You are just practicing the banishing rite so that when you need it, you will already know how to do it. When you are in circle and doing spirit evocations, have banishing incense handy for when you have completed your spirit working. In real life, the witch who found herself with the unwelcome entity in her sewing room went into the sewing room daily, burned banishing incense, and performed the banishing rite without casting a circle. She did it that way because the entity was already there and seemed to already be contained in her sewing room. Every so often, she would also make a floor wash that included lemon verbena and use that to sweep the room. She also used a mirror to aim sunlight into the room. Banishing incense. If you make your own and use sulfur, do so sparingly. A little goes a long way. When the witch mixed up her first batch of banishing incense, she used too much sulfur and had to leave the room herself before she could do the banishing rite. Asafoetida is also traditional and very bad smelling. If you are mixing up your own incense, just use a little of the very powerful ingredients, and the rest should be general protection ingredients like eucalyptus, rosemary, lavender, sage, basil, holy basil, gum mastic, poplar bud sheath oil, sometimes called balm of Gilead, high john the conqueror root, that is, morning glory root, or lemon. You don't need all of these ingredients, just pick a few. After your spirit working, you would ring your bell 9 times to get the attention of whatever spirit you have raised and provide the license to depart. This is politely thanking the spirit for its help and letting it know that the work is done for now and that it may leave. Call the spirit by its name when you thank it and give it permission to leave. By this point, a polite and cooperative spirit will have left. Whatever lingers is something you do not want hanging around. Now start burning your banishing incense. Ring the bell 9 times again and recite your banishing rite. Remember, there may be nothing there, but better safe than sorry. Remember the story of the witch who banished for more than a year? When you need to repeat banishings over and over, they approach what we call an exorcism. Exorcisms are never done once and done. They always need to be repeated, and whoever is performing them should be someone who has done a lot of shadow work, has strengthened themselves, and is well aware of their own weaknesses and what they crave that an evil spirit might be able to use to manipulate them. Thank you for joining me. That was a heavy deep dive into magic, and I didn't start out with the light stuff because you can find that anywhere. We need an antidote for some of that heavy stuff. Mirth and reference. A friend who knew that I had done banishings called me up concerned. He's been plagued by spirits rhyming in the night. He thinks they might be poetry geists. Another friend was invited to a spiritualist meeting. It would be her first time going there, and she asked me what I thought would be a good thing to bring to a spiritualist meeting. I told her she should bring flowers. She said, "Flowers? Any particular type of flowers?" I said, "Certainly. You bring in carnations." If you are enjoying the Covening podcast and have the ability to rate this podcast, please give me a high rating. It will make it easier for listeners to find the Covening podcast. I would be happy to receive feedback, suggestions, and enhancements ideas from you. On the web, you can find me at covening.org and click on Contact. And share this podcast with your witchy friends. Thank you to those of you who already are doing so. Thank you all for joining me. Please tune in next week. Blessed be. By the blade that cleaves the darkness and light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I carve a tunnel to the mortal realm. As common persons, we are masked until the circle be recast. Sacred ground remain unseen. Silence rules the worlds between. Till next we answer magic's call and meet together, witches all.